Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Providence Journal's College Basketball Podcast. This is Bill Koch, sports writer for the Journal, from my Warwick home on a crisp, sunny Friday morning here in Warwick. We are one weekend closer to Christmas. We are in the midst of exam breaks on college campuses throughout the country. I am joined, as usual, by my co-conspirator, the sports director at ABC6, the weekend co-host of Cordishian Coit on WEI Providence, Nick Coit, ladies and gentlemen. Coity, how we living?
And the man who has a lot of gradings still left to do for his class at URI. So as the kids are taking finals, I got that that full desk workload right now too.
Your favorite part of the semester, no?
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's, you know, I tell the kids it's just because I want to give them good feedback instead of just, you get an A and you get an A, you know? So I leave it to last minute. Typical me. It was like me as a student. Go figure.
Yeah, amazing that you and I make our living on deadlines.
True.
You know, that we would have liked to do things last minute. I mean, it's just shocking.
Shocking.
Shocking. Really is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the more extreme the deadline, the better for me. I don't do well with idle time.
Nope. No, me neither. I know.
No.
I'll start talking to somebody and then I'll lose track of time. And yeah, that's how it goes. My friends like to call it CST, Coit Standard Time. That's what I run on, you know, and that's never good.
I was telling a story the other night. I think it was my junior year. I had a media law and ethics class, and the final was a 20-page paper on, you know, a topic in media that you could pick and you had to argue one side or the other. And of course, I did the 20-page paper the night before I had to submit it, you know, wrote it in about 4 hours. And, you know, my dad and my brother at the same time were just like, how'd you write 20 pages in 4 hours? Like, I don't know. I just did it. It's like, you just do it. My dad said that would have taken me a week. And I was like, well, you're not.
Deadlines.
Yeah, deadlines. Bring it on.
Deadlines. Mm-hmm.
You know, did I procrastinate? Did I waste time? Yes. Did I get a B+? Yes, I did.
Yeah, you did.
Let's go. And for folks who have seen my college transcript, and thank God it's not many of our listeners, there were not many B+s on there. Most of the grades were a lot lower than that.
Whatever. You got the piece of paper. It's all that matters.
Got the piece of paper. Got the right to sit on this podcast with you, good sir.
Thankfully.
And we will head into the third full week of December, which means conference play for some, for Big East men. It is here. You know, we'll be deeper into that next week, and we'll get into that a little later on the pod. Coit, I wanted to start this one by talking about a venue that's all too familiar in 2023 in the NCAA, and that's federal court. You know, we had a decision come down earlier this week in a U.S. district court in West Virginia, a temporary restraining order regarding two-time transfers, you know, making them immediately eligible through December 27th. And why we bring that up is obviously we have a player on our men's teams who is affected by that, and that's David Green, the URI forward, who is yet to debut, a transfer from Hofstra and Louisiana Tech. He had a waiver application to the NCAA denied in late November. It was URI's understanding that he was going to be forced to sit out the full season because of that. And all of a sudden, the NCAA takes this ruling from a West Virginia judge and, you know, makes it bylaw for at least the next 2 weeks and says, you know, players who are in that situation are free to take the court if they see fit. The caveat there, of course, is in basketball, the minute you set foot on the court, you use an entire year of eligibility. There is no promise that that window will extend past the 27th. You know, and so therefore you have coaches who are reluctant, some, Archie Miller being one, to burn what could be a full year of eligibility on two or three games. He said Thursday that David Green would be unlikely to play this weekend against Delaware on Long Island. That's a neutral court game as part of a three-game card at the new home of the Islanders, UBS Arena. But, Coit, I just felt like we should start there and maybe, you know, sort of get into depth a little bit on the NCAA and the process here and ultimately the decision that you or I is making.
Yeah, this is a really interesting, fascinating, unprecedented sort of situation here with college basketball. And it was funny, Archie Miller cracked a smile, you know, when he said yesterday, you know, it's college athletics. You sort of have to take it as it goes and, you know, be on your toes here. And he's right. You know, it just seems like there's some new sort of territory all the time. And this is just, it's wild. It's wild to me that they would just, all right, now, you know, if you're a two-time transfer, you know, court ruling, it affects everybody. And the temptation is so, you know, it's so wide here for some of these players that could really help these programs to step onto the court and play. And David Green being one of them. I mean, everybody saw the blue-white scrimmage, you know, in October and saw how much of an impact that this guy can make for this team. And, you know, it stinks because, you know, this young man has, you know, sort of gone through all the emotions of, okay, we're denied a waiver. We're going to sit out this season. You know, Archie said yesterday that he was, you know, sort of resting his knee up a little bit, getting healthy, you know, so sort of shutting it down a little bit in terms of the on-court stuff so that he can be ready for next season. And then all of a sudden, boom, curveball, you might be able to play. Like, it's what a wild swing of emotions. But, you know, I think URI has the right mindset, which is let's not jump. Let's not, you know, let's not make any decisions quickly. Let's just see how this goes. And I think conference play, as Archie Miller said, was a realistic goal if this were to happen, because, okay, maybe it gives him a couple weeks. Maybe he sort of gets ready behind the scenes in practice, and maybe by then we know, okay, is this GRO going to be extended? Is this case going to be played out? Are these guys that play around the country going to be able to hold on to eligibility and not burn it because of two or three games? Just a lot of layers. But I think URI is taking the right approach, which is patience. Patience. Let's not make any quick decisions, and let's see how this goes. And I imagine that's tough for the program. I imagine it's tough for David Green, who I'm sure just would love to play, of course. But, you know, you have to be smart about these things. And I think URI is very measured in its approach.
URI's got two games that would be affected by this: Delaware on Saturday and then New Hampshire next week at home. Those both come before the 27th. They play one last non-conference game on the 30th against Northeastern, and then they jump into Atlantic 10 play after that, when they host St. Joseph's, who has been one of the stories of the league so far. This not an at-large team in terms of an NCAA tournament. It really doesn't matter what they do the next three games. This is all about the league at this point. If you want to make a postseason argument for this team, they're going to have to do something in January, February, and March. It's not going to happen here. You mentioned David Green's preparation at this point, and I think there's been some conjecture about that. URI scaled him back mainly because once they got what they thought would be a final decision and realized that he wasn't going to be playing this season, they prioritized other people in practice. You have limited time, limited reps. You need guys who are going to be out there on game night participating in those limited reps. He was still working out, still at practice, still on the team trips. He's still involved in every other way. But they sort of shifted into a longer-term focus for 2024-25 instead of him getting on the floor next week or 2 weeks later, and maybe gave those reps to Zeke Montgomery or Brandon Weston or somebody else otherwise at David Green's position. So it's not that he wouldn't be ready to play. He could give them some minutes here.
Sure.
But he might not be fully prepared like he was, say, in October, when they felt like there was still a chance with a waiver. So that's the first thing. The second thing, and Archie Miller touched on this Thursday in his availability, is, you know, we view David as both a potential short-term and long-term impact. We were willing to take a chance on a two-time transfer, knowing that his waiver might not be approved and, you know, that he might sit out this season. We were okay with that. But in terms of other players, we felt like we didn't want to have too many guys sitting out this season. We needed production. We needed some guys who could come in and play right away. You see Montgomery, Louis Courtwright, Jaden House, they've all started each of the first 10 games. You know, they were one-time transfers. They knew those guys would be immediately eligible. David Green was a little bit of a calculated roll of the dice. What if they had done that two or three times or four times? And what if they had known that at some point there would be relief granted by a court? Archie Miller said, yes, we would have recruited differently. We would have engaged with different players. And I think that's the difficulty for some coaches right now, is the guidance that they offered through the NABC, the guidance that university presidents and athletic directors offered, was that multiple transfers would be bad from an academic perspective. It would be difficult to have credits come through and transfer over, and it would be difficult to have athletes continue to progress toward a degree if they are at a second or a third or even a fourth school. And so they tailored their recruiting accordingly. They thought that this was going to be policy going into the year. But what happens is when schools don't get waivers approved, coaches run to their attorneys general in their states, lawsuits ensue, and we end up in court. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's so far away from what the spirit of the rule, the spirit of the NCAA was supposed to be. But here we are, Coy, living in ridiculous times in 2023.
The NCAA should not be in the waiver business.
Correct. Agreed. Archie Miller agrees with us, too.
Yeah, it's just this is what you open up. And I think it should be pretty cut and dry, Bill. I think it should be you're allowed to transfer once. If you transfer more than once, no matter, you know, I know circumstances come up and extenuating and coaches get let go and all of that. You can't transfer a second time. You have to sit out. You've transferred more than once. That's what the rule should. It should be cut and dry, because then you open yourself up to all these situations and all these things. And, you know, it's hard to say for somebody that maybe did transfer in and then a coach gets fired. I get that. You know, in situations, and I am, you know, sensitive to, you know, mental health and things of that nature. But these waivers and this process, you know, it should be decided elsewhere if that's going to be, you know, a case by case thing. The NCAA shouldn't be into this, but I think it should be pretty straightforward in terms of the rule that the NCAA has. And then anything beyond that, you know, maybe they get something else, another party, third party involved, something along those lines. But it's just, you've opened yourself up to all of this. It's wild, wild west. It's free agency in some, you know, way, shape, or form. But the one-time thing should be, I think that should be cut and dry. It should be the rule and stick to it, you know, and then go from there. Any extenuating circumstances, you know, it shouldn't be decided by the NCAA, because this is where it is.
Yeah, I don't, you know, in terms of a second transfer, the avenue I could see to it is if your coach does get fired. I understand that. You know, different coach comes in, has a different idea for how you'd like to play. Maybe you don't progress in your career the way you want to, and you think, well, I have to leave, you know, and you go for a second transfer and you like to go somewhere else. I generally think that an extra year of free education isn't a bad thing. I think it's a wonderful benefit. I think a lot of your peers, if you're in college right now, are going to get out deeply in debt. And if anything, if you're a major college men's basketball player, you're not only avoiding that debt, but you're getting paid to be in school. Sure. You know, I don't think necessarily that's a bad thing. I also look at a school on your eyes level, and I see a two-time transfer or multiple times more than that as something that would make it virtually impossible to hold on to any players who were of any decent caliber. You know, we've talked about that before. I think, you know, somebody is unhappy at Boston College or Syracuse, they're a four-star recruit, can't get off the bench for the Eagles or the Orange. You manage to entice them to leave, come to Kingston, take on a different role. Their first team All-Atlantic 10, their first year, and what happens? The NIL collectives come calling from elsewhere with money that you will never be able to match. That player will be gone, no question about it. You know, the other thing I would say about transfers, and this is a little more harsh. It goes a little bit more into the mental health space and, you know, the player's well-being and whatever else, but the players need to take some agency and some ownership over their careers. in my mind. Educate yourselves on the situation, on the decisions that you're making. Are you going to a place where a coach is likely to get fired, where he's on his last legs? Should you put yourself in that situation? Is it your only
right.
choice? Is it the only school recruiting you? You know, if you're at the Atlantic 10 level, the answer is probably not. You know, so take the time and take a stand against your grassroots coach or your high school coach or whoever's guiding your recruiting. Have a voice in that. You know, you're an adult. You want to be treated like an adult. You know, you're a college student moving out for the first time, you know, starting your life, whether it's professionally, personally, need to make some hard decisions in that way. And I would say the education in that way, in terms of coaching landscape or, you know, what the school's really about or whether or not my credits are going to transfer, my degree will actually carry somewhere else. You know, I think that's vitally important for players, you know, to do their own research in that way. And I think that might prevent some of the regrettable decisions that you make earlier in your career. You might be able to commit to the right school the first time and then maybe use that one transfer for good at some point instead of out of desperation or to escape something. You know, so I think, you know, those things all put together, a lot of moving parts, a lot of factors here, but, you know, it's a lot to consider for players, a lot more than maybe it's ever been.
I thought you had a really good question at URI availability Thursday with Louis Courtright. And I thought Louis answered it really, really well in terms of asking about the transferring, if you're going from, you know, a second time or another school, transferring credits and courses and all those things and the stress level of that. And he spoke on that and spoke well on that and just how it's one of those things you don't think about. You just think about the basketball aspect and fitting in on a team and a program and what it can do for your career. But I thought he was really good about saying like, no, it's, you know, you have to make sure the school can take the credits and you don't have to set yourself back in terms of courses and getting your degree and all that. And, you know, I thought that was a really, you know, pertinent question to the topic. And Louis answered it really, really well. And, certainly a kid that seems like he's got a really good, you know, head on his shoulders. You can see that on the court. You can see that in the way that he handles himself. So, you know, interesting, you know, to think about those things. And you're right, Bill. I think some of those hard decisions will probably need to be made and taking ownership of the career itself and your academics and all that. I mean, college is for, you know, learning some of those things and, you know, growing into, you know, becoming an adult and going into your professional career. And, you know, I guess that's not necessarily such a bad thing. So, you know, you brought up an interesting hypothetical with, you know, somebody two-time transfer. And I think that the hypothetical that you brought up, I think can only benefit, you know, a school like URI that, you know, does get somebody from a power team that maybe had a lesser role and becomes an all league player. And then, you know, it's more enticing to stick around. If this rule sort of holds up and is cut and dry, you transfer once, you're fine. You transfer twice, you got to sit out, you know? So interesting.
Yeah. Just recent history with URI. I mean, somebody like Caron Iverson, I don't know if he sees his last year here.
Yeah.
You know, because ultimately the year before they made the NCAA tournament, he was a pretty good player. And I think he would have rehabilitated his image enough as a player coming out of Memphis where he had barely seen the floor. I think he would have had some offers in this modern market. And, you know, I don't know if Dan Hurley's pitch or URI's collective pitch would have been enough to keep him here. You know, and you look on further, you know, would Stan Robinson have heard from other schools? You know, had he shown enough maybe after his first, you know, foray at URI where he could have gone back up a level. You know, that's not something that you would have wanted to entertain at the time.
No.
You know, so law of unintended consequences when you want to argue for David Green, if you're a URI fan, you know, you could say, yeah, we want him eligible right now. He'd help us right now. It's so unfair. Well, you know, at some point you could be on the other end of this.
Yeah.
You know, and the NCAA and Archie got into that certainly about, you know, they shouldn't be in the waiver business. I agree with him. everyone's always going to have a reason, you know, and a lot of those would be valid, but doesn't mean that you have to play basketball right away, you know, yeah. Play football right away. You can move closer to home and still be with family if they're struggling. Yeah. It doesn't mean you need to be on the court to do it. Right. You know, and that's hard. It's hard to say. It's hard to take away that part of a student athlete's identity. I understand a lot of it is tied up in being a player, in trying to advance yourself, in thinking that you'll be a pro at some point. And then at the A-10 level, that is realistic. You know, a lot of these guys will be professional players after they're done in college. But I think to like a lower major level, you know, like an America East or an NEC or, you know, at some programs in those leagues, you're not going to be a professional player. The majority of your roster is not going to go to Europe and make six figures. You're in college to get a degree and to do it for free and advance your standing in life. And, you know, that doesn't require that you transfer three times and play right away at each stop. You know, for the coaches, the guidance that they gave, and for the athletic directors and the university presidents, the guidance that they gave was so that student athletes would continually advance toward a degree.
Yeah. And
ultimately, when you transfer that many times, your advancement towards said degree is going to be hindered considerably.
Yeah. And the time will come, you know, it always did. It was only a few years ago that there wasn't a one-time transfer rule. And if you transferred, you had to sit out. And the time will come. There is plenty of examples of guys that had to sit out a year that, you know, I think the sell is, you know, you work on your skill set, you work on yourself as a player, you further your academics so that when you do step on the floor, you're in good standing there, you're pretty well advanced, and, you know, you're ready to go. You know, I think of somebody like a Jared Bynum at PC, like had to sit out a year, and, you know, look at how important he became for the Friars, look at how much his career has continued to, you know, expand now that he's at Stanford. Like, there are plenty of examples of guys that had to sit out. I look at currently right now, I think it was mid-year that Bryant picked up Sharif Gross-Bullock. Obviously, he couldn't play. It was mid-year, came in, but basically had to sit out the year before he could step on the floor. And now he's one of the best players in America East, you know, and leading Bryant. And, you know, he was able to step in right away and help the team. And he was also around a team that, you know, was an NCAA tournament team that got there, that, like, he saw all that. And that to me is a good sell for the coaches too, is, well, here's our program. Here's what we're putting together. Here's our culture. You come in, you be part of it, not on the floor this year, but next year, boom, we expect you to be the guy. We expect you to lead our team. We expect you to do this, this, and this. So put in the work, you know, and right now focus on school and focus on getting better at this and focus on being healthy and all of that. The time will come. The time will come. It always did for guys that transferred, you know, that had to sit out, you know, now it will come. And so that would be the sell if I'm a coach. And, you know, I think it can only make your program more healthy in terms of selling your culture here going forward.
And just in general, I am pro player. I think you should be able to leave if your coach leaves. I think you should be able to get paid. I think it's ridiculous that players couldn't share in TV revenue previously.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind them being university employees and getting into a full revenue sharing agreement. I don't think that'd be the worst thing in the world. You know, especially in football, where it's just buckets of cash at these power schools. But in terms of freedom of movement and being able to transfer whenever you want, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to draw the line there.
There needs to be some sort of regulation.
I don't feel great about
some
that.
Sort. No, I know. I know.
I genuinely do not think that being forced to sit out a year is some sort of unreasonable punishment. No. I really don't.
No, really especially don't. When you're furthering your education. And again, there's got to be some sort of cap. There has to be some sort of cap, because you're right. You just don't want this to become wild and crazy free agency in the NCAA, because that's what it would become. You know, maybe there is some sort of standard part of the rule where, you know, maybe it's the leadership change clause or something. Like a coach gets let go and a player, there's an, you know, exemption for a player who wants to leave a program, something like that. You know, maybe that's it. You know, maybe that's the solution. It's not a waiver. It's just an exemption to the rule or something, you know, but I think it's just got to be cut and dry, because these case by case decisions and all that, it strings people along. It's no good. It's frustrating. It's uncertain. There's just got to be some cut and dryness to it.
Lawyers, Coity, billable hours. Got to get them out of sports. They don't make anything any more fun.
Right.
They certainly do not. Apologize to my friends in the legal community out there, but butt out. For the love of God, please. And I understand URI fans' desperation at this point, because they have lost three in a row, you know, falling to Providence, Brown, and now Charleston on the road. You know, I understand that you had a bit of a promising start, played well in your home games, you know, felt like you could have learned something from the two games at Mohegan Sun, and, you know, now obviously struggling defensively and, you know, facing a tough challenge against Delaware, a team that won at Xavier earlier this year. You know, that's obviously going to be a tough one. You hope that URI's New York contingent leaves a ton of tickets for that one. Louis Courtwright being among them. Brandon Weston, we expect him potentially to be in uniform on Saturday. He's going to return from some time away from the team for personal issues. David Fuchs probably won't play. He's still in concussion protocol, has not practiced. You know, but guys like Weston, Dwayne Woodward, their assistant coach, Louis Courtwright, Cam Estevez, those guys all have New York ties. You would hope that, you know, they draw a little bit of a crowd out to the island for what's a 4:30 p.m. tip against Delaware in the middle of the triple header.
I almost screwed that up on the air yesterday. Thank God Bill was sitting next to you, and I said, "Are they the 4:30 game or the 2 game?" He said the 4:30. I was like, "All right, see, edit that out."
You didn't need to admit to that. You just peeled down the curtain behind Tree V Production. You didn't need to do that.
No, it's okay. I almost screwed up. Almost. Only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades there, my man.
There you go.
But yeah, should be good.
The team that actually kicks off that card will be Bryant. They play Towson in the first game. You know, Bryant's coming off a non-conference loss at Cincinnati. You know, and I guess you look back at that game and the final's 85-53, and you think, oh my goodness, you know, the Bulldogs got absolutely shelled in this game. And then you look at the scoring and the actual timeline, and you realize just how frayed the elastic can be when you're playing up in competition, when you're playing these bye games. You know, this is a 6 or 8 point game about 28, 30 minutes into it, and all of a sudden Bryant can't score the rest of the way. Cincinnati is physical, hungry, angry on defense. The Bulldogs can't get anything. Open shots, contested shots, can't get to the foul line, and ultimately get run out of the gym in Cincinnati. But you know, that wasn't necessarily one of those games that you look at and say, well, this was a total disaster. We didn't start well. We were never in it. I think it's just the realities of bye games. And, you know, it's the realities of Bryant's schedule. We talked about it leading into the year, how difficult it was going to be and how some nights it could get away from them. You consider the year they went to the NCAA tournament, they lost by 67 at Houston. So it's not the end. It's not curtains, but it is a reality. It is a reminder of your standing in the college basketball world every once in a while.
Yeah, and it's a game of runs, and, you know, I think Bryant probably looks at it and showed a lot of good things before things got away, and that happens. And so you take the good things out of that game, and, you know, you sort of point those out. You know, for Bryant, it's been a really tough road when it comes to non-conference scheduling here. But I think, you know, when they get to America East play, I think they're going to be pretty battle-tested. They've played a lot of really good competition. And, you know, they've really had their moments. I mean, right now, still, of the four Division I men's teams in the state, they have the best win of the year. Going to Florida Atlantic and winning down there is the best win of the year.
Yeah.
And that is that certainly is something you can take out of non-conference play and say, when we are at our best, when we are playing well, this is what we can do. And so I'm sure that Phil Martelli Jr. is looking at that. And, you know, with this recent game, you, like I said, you take the good things out of it. You know, I've been really impressed with, you know, some guys here going through non-conference play. I think Earl Timberlake's had a good stretch here in non-conference. I think they really value what he brings. I think he's brought a lot to the table this year. He does a lot of different things for them. And I think that's been really, really highlighted. So I think he's had a great season so far. He brings that to conference play. You know, he was projected to be, you know, an All-America East guy. He brings what he's been bringing on the floor to America East play. Bryant is going to be tough to beat on any given night. So result is what it is. You're playing an up game. You know, we'll see what they do here with the Holiday Hoop Fest. Obviously, they want to have a good showing here, you know, on Saturday with Towson.
The more strange one, based on the recent form, was the loss at Stony Brook. You know, that felt like a little bit of a fumble in the second half. You had a 3-point lead. Connor Withers gets a technical foul. Stony Brook goes on a 10-0 run. They never trail again. That final's 86-75. The one thing to take away from that game, Coy, though, was absolutely ridiculous 3-point shooting by the Seawolves. I don't know if I've seen many games where a team goes 11 for 15 and a half from three and makes seven in a row. Outrageous. You and I get to these games well before they start. We watch teams shoot in warmups. How often do they make seven in a row from different guys? You know, one guy stands in the corner and he can make seven in a row, but how often do seven different guys make seven threes in a row? Does not happen very often against air. Never mind against the defense. That was quite a 20 minutes by Stony Brook in that one.
And that's the thing. I haven't gone through all of those 3-point possessions with Stony Brook watching that game. I'm sure that the coaching staff would say, well, maybe we can defend it better. I think you can defend it all you want. If they're hitting seven in a row and going 11-15, it's going in. Sometimes that happens. You can explain it away. You can try to affect the shot. You can do all that. Sometimes it's just going in, you know. And like I said, I don't know how many of those were contested in terms of statistics. I'd have to go through it again. But sometimes a team just gets hot. We've seen it before. That's basketball, man. So, you know, I'm sure that they weren't happy not getting that victory. But you know, again, I think as we're wrapping up here, non-conference play, you know, I do think the Bulldogs have a lot of things that they can point to that they'll be encouraged with when they get to America East play.
Game of it was, you know, Withers had a big night that when he had 32 points. He was,
32, right? Yeah.
yeah, he was lighting it up in that game.
Yeah.
You know, just one of those things, you know, you want to make sure you don't give the officials a reason to blow the whistle. Don't give them a chance to interject into the game. You know, it's
Well, it was kind of the opposite when the Brown Bryant game happened, you know,
yeah.
because I think Connor probably it got the team going when the officials got a little bit involved in that game, got a little chippy.
Shoe wound up on the other foot.
Yeah,
Yeah.
interesting.
Did.
Interesting.
Did. Brian's got two coin flip games coming up, according to Ken Pom. Towson on Saturday, as we said. And then they host Drexel next Friday. Both of those are 1 or 2 point games on Ken Pom. You know, two games that Bryant could build some momentum into New Year's Eve, where they go to Ole Miss. You know, which obviously isn't fun. I mean, come on. New Year's Eve, scheduling realities being what they are, that's just brutal.
Yeah, but these two games coming up are, you know, they are
Their
building blocks.
chance. Their
Yeah.
chances.
Yep. These are building
There.
blocks. These are games that if you don't get these or you don't play well in these, you would be disappointed. You expect them to have a good showing here, and for their guys to show up. And, you know, there's a lot of different guys that can show up for Brian. You just mentioned Connor Withers. You know, I mentioned Earl Timberlake. You know, Rafael Pinzon, I think, is just he's been such a great weapon when he comes into the game. I think his role has been really well suited for this team. You know, comes in off the bench, gets a feel for the game, and then boom, a lot of times he just leaves a stamp on the game. You know, just comes in and says, all right, I'm gonna change things here. I'm gonna come in because he can score. You know, it's really impressive. So yeah, I think that's one good thing with Bryant is I think that you have established roles, which is something we talked about with Bryant last year was a bit of a struggle. I think with this year's Bryant team, yep, I think they've settled into that a little bit. And that's a good thing. So you hope that they have a good showing here these next two games. You take your shot at Ole Miss, see what happens. You know, it is what it is. And then we get rolling in January.
Well, it's a good point. You know, you got two real chances here to try to establish yourselves and, you know, get set for an SEC bye game. And then Marquise play is right there. You know, so Bryant coming into the thick of it. Providence also on the cusp of getting to Big East play. Just one more non-conference matchup. That's against Sacred Heart on Saturday at Amica Mutual Pavilion. It's a 1:30 tip. Eric Rube will have the cover on that one while I am on the podcast road trip to Long Island. Coity the Friars idle throughout this week for exam break. They're coming off a home win against Brown, a renewal of that rivalry series, the first time it was played since 2017, and Providence played some of their best defense of the season in the first half of that game, 74-54 against the Bears. They held them to 5 field goals in the first half, really smothered them on the perimeter. You look at Keno Lilly Jr., Aaron Cooley, Felix Kloman, they went 0-14 combined in the first half of that game. It's a good response by the Friars after losing at Oklahoma, you know, and really being humbled in the second half by the Sooners. So good for Providence to get back on track. You would expect much the same against Sacred Heart, and you would certainly hope for a cohesive, smooth effort against the Pioneers, because Marquette's coming in here to lead off the Big East schedule, the defending conference regular season and tournament champions. That will be a tough assignment for Providence on Tuesday night.
Big East play. Before the holiday, I'm still
love
still
it.
Adjusting to it. Yeah,
love
but
it.
That's great. I mean, we're going to have a huge game coming up at the Amp right away to start. Tyler Kolek's coming in. He's playing well.
Yeah.
Big East player of the week.
National
player of the week. You're right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to be really, really fun. You know, the Friars, again, they just want to go out and, you know, Kim English has very much been about, we're focused on us, we're focused on us, we're focused on us. And I think, obviously, the right mentality here with this game against Sacred Heart, you want, you know, things to go well for, you know, what, you know, your guys do, how you run your offense, how you run your defense, and then really just sort of have your answers as to how you're going to play things as Big East play gets rolling on Tuesday. You know, I think the guy that has really benefited probably post Bahamas trip, I think Bryce Hopkins has, you know, really taken the time here to figure out, okay, here's where I fit, you know, with this new coaching staff, the way they want to do things, and balancing that with here's what I do well, and here's how I can help this team in the best way possible, and here's how I can play at my best. You know, I still think he's figuring out the spots to take that 3-point shot. But I think he realizes too that, you know, getting to the basket, getting involved in the paint, you know, and really attacking, I think is a real strength for Bryce Hopkins. And that's when he really can take over the floor and take over the game. So I think, you know, look for more of that. I think with Sacred Heart, keeping those skills sharp. And then, of course, you know, the way Devin Carter's played this year, I'm excited to see what he brings with this team in conference play, because I think his confidence level is high. I think his, you know, play level is high right now on both ends of the floor. I think he's just been rolling, been their most consistent guy all year. And so I think he's going to be a real weapon when it comes to Big East play and what the Friars are able to do.
And Providence has done it with defense so far. If we go to our friends at KenPom, they're 14th right now in adjusted efficiency, 6th in effective field goal percentage against, 5th against opposing two-pointers, and 12th in block percentage.
Devin's a big part of that.
He sure is. And they've been really tough inside the arc against opponents. It's only one team that shot 50% or better from two against them through 10 games, and that's Oklahoma. And you know, you would expect Big 12 team, power conference athletes, you would expect them to do that. Kansas State and Georgia couldn't do it. You know, so you look at Providence and you look at their length on defense with Josh Aduro, Hopkins, Ticket Gaines, Carter out front. You know, just a disruptor. You could see what he did, you know, against Brown, whether it was to Keno Lilly or to Felix Kloman or to Aaron Cooley. Providence switching on the perimeter, you know, with versatile guys who can guard out front. Carter and Ticket Gaines leading that effort out front. Good length for a shooting guard at 6'3", and Ticket Gaines at 6'7", and Bryce Hopkins at 6'7", and Aduro at 6'10". You know, not a lot of space to work against the Friars from inside the arc. You know, and the other thing that they do well, and Archie Miller has said it, and Mike Martin said it the other day, is they don't let you take threes. They run you off the line. They'll overplay you from three, and then they'll force you to drive into where they know they have help. You know, and I think schematically, it's really impressive to watch what they've done here through 10 games. They will have quite a challenge against Marquette, obviously. You know, Tyler Kolek's one of the best point guards in the nation. Marquette lost four times last year after December 3rd. One of those was here in that double overtime classic, 103-98, the game where Bryce Hopkins really made his name nationally for the Friars, the first 2020 game for PC since January 2010, in 13 years. 13 years, yes. You know, so you're looking at Marquette should be coming in here loaded for bear. In my mind, you know, I would certainly think that Shaka Smart might bring up what happened last year. And, you know, the fact that this is one of few places where they encountered a bit of a struggle on their way to a conference title. You know, and for Providence, it's the ideal chance to make a statement right away. You know, here's a conference favorite. They come in, you have them in your building. You know, it's an 8:30 start, figures to be a rowdy crowd downtown. You would think that if once you take care of Sacred Heart, which they should do on Saturday, you feel like this is a great opportunity for Providence to get off on the right foot.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that the Friars will want to continue to improve at, because we've talked about how good their defense is and, you know, some of the good things that they've done. I think the one area, and I'm thinking, you said the position, you said point guard, you said how tough Tyler Kolek can be. I think the one area where the Friars are young, still adjusting, and can get better is who's handling the basketball and taking care of it. Because I think the turnover numbers have been higher than they want. You know, and as you get into Big East play, you can't give these other teams extra opportunities. And again, they're young. You know, I think Jaden Pierre has had to step forward as a sophomore into a bigger role. Handling the basketball, obviously was out for a few games with injury, so set him back a little bit. And then Garway Duel is obviously a freshman, very talented, but stepping into a role, you know, as a young player, you know, on a team that, you know, has a lot of talent at a lot of different positions, but taking care of the ball and being smart with the ball, I think is going to be really, really huge for these Friars going forward, because you know, I think particularly the last couple of games, the Oklahoma game, you know, the turnover numbers are, you know, not where they want them to be. And you got to value the basketball.
Yeah, you do. And certainly, you know, that's something that will get punished in the Big East. When you're playing against these quality point guards on other teams, you know, whether it's Kolek, Trey Alexander at Creighton, Tristan Newton at UConn, you know, these guys are tough and they're experienced. And you can't let that be a big area of separation on your roster. You cannot allow that going into these games. You need Jaden Pierre and Garway Duol to elevate in that way. You know, I know they've talked a little bit about, and Devin Carter talked a little bit about at Big East Media Day, maybe him playing the one a little bit. And I look at his turnover rate, and I think with the amount of energy he exerts on defense and, you know, trying to score at the rim, I don't necessarily know that he should be your primary ball handler at any point. I think it's up to those other two guys to grow up here in a hurry. And they will get one of their toughest tests of the season on Tuesday night against Marquette. That's an 8:30 tip downtown. Go ahead, Cody.
I was just kind of like going through statistics as I was making that point. If
Yeah.
I'm not mistaken, I believe turnovers per game, the Friars are second to last in the Big East right now. So that speaks to something that needs to improve, obviously. I think the worst team in the league in terms of turnovers is DePaul, and Providence is second to
Oh.
last.
Oh.
So obviously something, and Marquette is third. They turn it over four times less per game. So, and that's not surprising, obviously, with an experienced point guard with Tyler Kolek. So just pointing out the numbers here, obviously something that, needs to improve.
You don't want to be grouped with DePaul ever.
Yeah, right.
But then again, DePaul's better than Louisville. That's a separate podcast.
Oh.
What's going on there? Sorry to our buddy Will Gagan, proud Cardinal fan, Louisville native, that he has to watch the Kenny Payne error, not era, error, a disaster. Never should have started, should end immediately. The KFC Yum Center, not a great place to be these days, is it, Cody? No, not at all. Separate podcast, coaching carousel podcast. We'll save that one for after the year. But chances are Louisville's going to open, and that'll be an interesting hiring process at this point. Not much women's action here, Coit, as we go into this week, into exam break. Brown is on a long break, 21 days. They won't play again until around the new year out in California. The URI women have extended time off here. They'll play again at home next week. So let's look at the Providence women who are in action on Saturday, coming off two straight wins, their most recent at Yale. And Providence really grinding some out here, Coy. These last two victories without Kylie Shepherd, without Grace Sifosa, they managed to clip URI, and then they go to Yale and win 63-58, a game that was tight throughout. Bryn Farrell blows up with 23 points. Olivia Olsen is on the Big East honor roll this week. She had 15 on 7 for 10 shooting. Emily Archibald gets you 10 rebounds in that game. The Friars shot 50% from the floor. I think most nights, the way they defend, if you told Erin Bath, hey, you're going to shoot 50% from the field, she'd feel really good about their chances of winning. And I look at Providence and I'm really impressed with the response. They go to 3-5, two of their best players are out. Non-conference wise, they had a couple tough tests coming up. This could have spun, a little bit. They could have limped into Big East play, literally and figuratively. And that didn't happen. And I saw Olivia Olsen the other night on the Big East podcast, and she credited Erin Bath and the coaching staff with helping change the mentality here early. She felt like this could have gotten away in her previous seasons on campus, but that she and her teammates are already feeling the effect of that coaching change and of that culture change in the program. So, round of applause to the Friars for what they're doing right now.
Yeah, there's clearly a buy-in from these players, and with some of the injuries that they've dealt with here recently, I think that's been evident in the fact that they've just gotten contributions from a lot of different places. Olivia Olsen obviously leading the way, and I'm thinking Olivia Olsen, and I'm seeing the block that she had with 13 seconds left against URI to help seal that victory.
Yeah.
Just that to me was just a small example of buy-in from one of, if not your best player, and everything sort of trickling down from there. So clearly they are bought into what this coaching staff is bringing. They're seeing the results here, with the last couple of games, which is great. A player like Archibald, I think is making some timely plays. Clearly they're gaining momentum here, and I think they can feel good about, okay, new staff comes in, they establish what they want to do, players are seeing the results, it's only going to get better from there. You talked about, Yale, the URI win to me was, impressive because we know what URI's aspirations are this year. We know the kind of skill and talent they have on the floor. PC took care of business, got a great win. And so, yeah, they can feel good about the direction that they're going here. The Friars have certainly built momentum.
If you head to Alumni Hall on Saturday, it's ugly sweater night. Coit, you got any in the closet for that one?
I mean, I have a couple. I felt bad because I did the Brown women's game when it was ugly sweater night, and the whole coaching staff wore ugly sweaters. I didn't know until I showed up because I thought they had just done it for the men's game. I didn't know they were doing one for the women's game. I would have worn one because I think it would have been more spirited, you know, with the coaching staff wearing them as opposed to, and not to say that Mike Martin would not get into the holiday spirit, but if I wore an ugly sweater and, you know, the Brown men were down 5 at halftime and Mike was walking over having to do the halftime interview and this schlub is wearing a Home Alone ugly sweater and asking him about his first half defense, I don't think it comes off well. So, you know, I wish I had worn it for the Brown women's game, long story short.
Yeah, not to mention the pregame with TJ Sorrentine and Tyson Wheeler, the barbs that would have been thrown your way.
Oh, I would have been
anything
crushed.
I mean,
crushed. I know. Well, you know what? We crushed Scott Cordisci for his angel, you know, checkered sport coat that he was wearing that night. So it's okay. We still had somebody to rag on. I believe my words were that Scott Cordisci looks merry and bright. I think that's what I said on the broadcast. So
I've said before, you and your Saturday morning partner, you two need counseling.
Yes, we do.
You know, it's wonderfully, correct, wonderfully and bitterly dysfunctional between the two of you. I just sit there and laugh.
It's a beautiful partnership.
Also, more importantly, on Saturday, though, it is the teddy bear toss at Alumni Hall. And I know that, you know, those teddy bears are donated to kids. You know, and Providence's team will probably make the delivery themselves, if I had a guess. You know, that's one thing that Olivia did mention on that Big East podcast, which was a really good listen. You know, that Aaron Bath has encouraged the team to give back a lot more this year, that they've done more charity stuff, that they've been out in the community a little bit more. And, you know, that sort of engagement, you would expect that from her personality, I think. You know, we've gone over that on the pod. Ugly sweater night, Coit. This is a woman who's walking around with a walking boot that is decorated to look like Rudolph. You can only imagine, correct, what Aaron Bath has in the closet for a Christmas ugly sweater night.
Fantastic. Oh, I'm sure she's
that's gonna be something,
time,
right?
You know what? The expectations are high here.
They are,
Coach Bath. Yeah.
They are. Just put them right out there. I think you're going to see something impressive out of her and her staff. If I had a guess.
I would too. Yep.
And, you know, beyond all that, a really important game because Providence plays two games at the West Palm Beach Classic. The first one's against Baylor, which is really, really tough. You know, even at full strength, you're playing the Bears. That's a legacy program on a neutral court. Your second game's against Kennesaw State, which stands to reason will be more manageable. You know, but you have a realistic shot here of finishing non-conference play above 500 if you take care of Sacred Heart. And then you can split in West Palm. You know, and I think if you had gone to Providence and said, hey, you're going to lose two of your best players for an extended period, you're going to be dressing Lauren Edwards, who's a graduate manager. She's going to be starting and playing heavy minutes. you know, and you could still go into Big East play above 500 at really what's the start of a rebuild. You know, I think they would have signed up for that, you know, 100 times out of 100. And I think that's a credit to what they've done so far.
Amen. Yeah, amen. And it's like I said, the buy-in is clear. You see that in the results. And, you know, that's a great thing in the first year of a new direction for the program.
Yeah. So they will they'll play Saturday, 5 o'clock against Sacred Heart. The next women's game in the area will be on the road. Bryant women will go to Boston College on December 20th. What night is that, Coy? Wednesday, right?
December 20th is Wednesday, correct?
Yeah. The Bryant women will be coming off what was really a glorified scrimmage against Fisher. 93-20 was the final in that one. You know, and I went to the Chase the other night just, you know, mainly because there were no other games in the area and mainly because I you know, I wanted to check in on Bryant. I hadn't seen them since they lost to Brown. You know, and what I saw was a team that played the right way, even though they knew it was a mismatch, even though Fisher's a non-D1. You're looking at a team that It was good shot selection. It wasn't many turnovers. They defended well. Fisher didn't make a three in the game. You know, they got out to the perimeter and guarded. It was a team that didn't take liberties. And that was the phrase that I used in my story. I think, you know, a lot of times you have teams and they know there's a talent mismatch. And, you know, on paper, it's not really going to be close. And you know, you could have players do some things that they normally wouldn't or shouldn't do in games. You know, and I thought Bryant was pretty locked in for a team that's playing a non-D1 and going into exams and, you know, is going to be relatively inactive here for a long period. You know, I took all that as pretty encouraging.
Yeah, I'd say so too. You know, when you have a game like that, yeah, it's, you want to do things the right way. And even the last time when we saw them, you know, in that Brown game, I think they're, again, a program with a first-year head coach, but a program that clearly has, you know, buy-in from, you know, the players, and it starts with the best player on down. You know, I think even that night after the Brown game, you know, Mariana, you know, Plantis Fortuny was very straightforward about, okay, here's what the new coaching staff sold me on, and, you know, here's what I, you know, where I think I can improve. You know, it kind of matches up, and, you know, so I'm going to stick around and we're going to go forward with this. And you're seeing some of those results. You know, the 3-point shot is something she's added to her repertoire, and, you know, that's a great thing. It opens things up, not only for her, but for her teammates and all that. So, yeah, you know, Fisher game is about playing the right way, doing the right things, keeping your skills sharp. And, you know, but certainly I think that they have gotten buy-in, and obviously, they found themselves gem too in Mia Mancini, who, you know, I think Ian was on the air with us this week saying that he'd like to, you know, request that the Rookie of the Week Award in America East be renamed to the Mia Mancini Award. Yeah. I'll put a formal request on this podcast as well, because, you know, she wins it every week, you know, because she's playing so well. So, yeah. Yeah, certainly good things there.
Yeah, three in a row now for Mia Mancini, four on the season for the Wheeler grad. You know, and you look at Mia specifically, and I think you look at the connection between Mia and Lynn Ann already, and I think you go back to Tennessee State and Brown, two yeah. games where she really struggled, 2 for 16 from the field against Tennessee State, 0 for 14 from the field against Brown. And at that point, the realities of the scouting report become clear. Hey, you might be number one or number two for another team. It's going to be Mariana and then you. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to that as a first-year player who's, you know, 8 games into her career? What do you do? Well, against Sacred Heart, she goes 10 for 16. She has 28 points. They win in overtime. They start a 3-game winning streak. She is back to being the player who we saw come roaring out of the blocks here at Bryant. And that's growth in real time. You're seeing yep. it right there.
Yeah, and that's a great thing. You know, and not totally surprised if, you know, she's going to make this sort of acceleration as a young player. You know, teams are going to sort of zero in on that. And so how do you adjust? And so it's a great sign of rapid growth from a player that's going to be really important for them, not only this season, but going forward as Lynn Ann really puts her stamp on the program.
Yeah, we, you know, we mentioned you or I briefly. You know, they would be the next team to break out of the exam break. They host Lemoyne next week in an 11 a.m. game. I would imagine that's probably a field trip game, a kids type probably. Of game.
Yeah,
at the Bryant Center, right?
Cover your ears.
Oh, cover your ears. It's right. Please no. As we said previously on the pod, please no one put the noise meter up on the video nope. board at the Bryant Center. Please don't do that.
Nope. Happy that the kids will come out and,
love it.
And see it.
Love
it's
it.
Great. Great for the program. Great for the young kids to see, you know, these women thriving on the floor. I might have to wear your plugs with the yelling. It's like going to a Pete Bruins game 3 o'clock on a Sunday.
I hope they got 5,000 kids in the building for that game.
Me too.
I genuinely do. You know, especially little girls, because you have the notion of possibility right out there in front of you on the floor.
Big time.
But please do not put the screamer meter up on the video board. We don't like that. It's no fun.
Nope.
It's no fun.
They'll yell anyways, but that's okay.
That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, the URI women, though, Coy, they do they need a break at this point? Did they need this exam break?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, get away from the floor a little bit. Because it's been sort of Jekyll and Hyde. There's been some frustration there because I think there's been times where you've seen URI and the potential that they have and the team that we thought going into the season, ooh, this could really be a real threat to get to the NCAA tournament, maybe in non-conference play, maybe build an at-large, you know, if you get the right sort of wins. But there's just been nights where they've been really good. Then there's been nights where you're like, what's going on here? And you hear from Tammy Reese afterwards saying, well, we didn't practice well, so we didn't play well. And it's like, you hate to be on that kind of roller coaster for a team in a season where you really have high expectations that this team could really threaten to get to the NCAA tournament. So taking a break from the floor, you know, when there is that kind of frustration, it's probably a healthy thing and a good thing. I think the team, it really stinks that there's a big break here. I think the team that really was playing well, I don't think you want to have too much time away from the floor because they have been playing well, is the Brown women. Like, I think they've had a really good non-conference stretch. They've gotten some really nice wins, building momentum. Monique's third year, 21 days. Oh, man, that stinks. If I'm them, I'm itching to play. I want to get out there. You know, and I'm sure that wasn't their plan. I'm sure they had maybe something scheduled or thought to get something scheduled, whatever. And they'll stay sharp, I'm sure. And that's sort of the reality of the Ivy League sometimes is there is this big break because academics are a huge priority, of course. But, you know, I just hope they stay as sharp as they have been because they've been really, really good.
Yeah, Brown, I won't out the team because I don't know if Brown wants it out there, but they did have a game scheduled for the 21st that ultimately got canceled.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
You know, so that would have helped, you know, lessen this gap a little bit. As it stands, they're sitting on six straight wins, waiting to play San Diego. That's going to be on December 30th. It's a two-game swing through California. They'll also play San Francisco while they're out there on New Year's Day. You know, that'll be a nice trip for the team. You get away for the holidays a little bit. You got Bella Mauricio, who's a California native. She said that she's going to be leaving a ton of tickets for friends and family out there.
Nice.
You know, and Brown, I think if you compare Brown to URI, URI obviously won at Brown. Brown's 8-3. You know, that's one of the games that they did lose. Brown has found an identity. They found a rotation. They found all the things that we talk about all the time in this podcast that are so important to college teams. And URI just has not yet at this point. And you look at their most recent result, 55-44 at St. John's. You know, their offense looks like the human equivalent of just slamming your hand in a car door over and over and over and over again. Game against the Red Storm, they're 2-for-11 from three, 7 assists against 19 turnovers. It's just the same recurring problems over and over and over again. And, you know, we've seen this team play well in previous years under Tammy, so I don't think it's philosophical necessarily. I just think that they have pieces right now that aren't meshing, you know, and for whatever reason that is, whether that's, you know, they haven't practiced well or their skill sets overlap or don't intertwine in some way, or they just haven't found their chemistry with some new players in the lineup. I don't know what that is. And, you know, I don't necessarily know if Tammy knows what that is either. And I think that's a major source of her frustration to this point. I think Brown is the polar opposite of that. I think Brown has a great idea of who they are. I think they have a great idea of who they want to play together, how they want to play. It's very much defense first identity. They're very sticky at that end of the floor. You've identified two or three primary scorers in Kyla Jones, Grace Arnoldy, Bella Mauricio. Those are going to be the players who take the big shots at the end of games. Alyssa Moreland's really improved from last season.
Really improved.
She's their breakout player.
Me too. This year,
I think she's been excellent. So far, you hear coaches talk all the time about that jump from freshman to sophomore year. She's taking it here in real time. You know, and I just think that Brown and URI, just their arcs so far, their progression, the steps that they've taken along the path so far this season, I think they've been so opposite in that way, despite the head-to-head result.
I'm giving Bill the Robert De Niro face right now. Yeah, that's a pretty good point. Pretty good point, Mr. Koch. That's pretty good. I agree. And it's I think you're seeing it in the results. You're seeing it in the results, and just that's why Brown, I think, has had some of the biggest wins for the women's program, in the state so far, beating two Big East teams, beating an A-10 team, because they have already identified, as you said, the identity. And you're right. I think with URI, when you look at it, who is, if you have to answer the question, who is the primary scorer for the URI Rams? You could look at it and say, well, Knights, it could be Tisha, on Knights, well, Dee Dee's had her moments. Well, if Sophie gets hot from three, it's, well, if Maya's got a night where she can dominate, which is not necessarily a bad thing that different players can step forward on different nights. But, the question is hard to answer right now, and I think with Brown, you can say, well, this player does this, this player does that, this player's doing this. You just mentioned Alyssa Moreland stepping forward. She does a little bit of everything. Yeah, I think the identity crisis is definitely there for URI. And, you've got A-10 play that, will help you to try to figure that out. But maybe a little time away from the court, as we said, can help them in terms of sort of reevaluating, taking a deep breath and saying, okay, what can we do to make this, happen? Make this mix together, make this mesh together. And there are some new faces. You obviously have some returners, but you have some new faces this year that are, coming into the program, coming into the culture. Sometimes that doesn't just happen right away.
Right.
Sometimes it takes a lot of time. And so, there's a plenty of time still left in this season. But URI obviously wants to, reach its goals. And so at some point, you hope that it does mesh together.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the team right now, most likely to make an NCAA tournament on paper in the state, and that's the Providence men. And if you're getting down to crunch time, it's Devin Carter and Bryce Hopkins, period.
Yep.
And probably Josh Aduro as well. But like those will be the guys taking the shots. Those will be the guys who they draw the plays up for. It's very clear. And it's also very clear where they will be used on the court. Aduro will be in the post. Hopkins will be floating somewhere in between. Carter will be on the perimeter trying to get to the rim. Those are defined. They're set. And it's so early in the year and they're already set in that way. It's such a nice luxury for a roster, for a coaching staff. You build everything off that going forward. And, for the URI women, they haven't necessarily found that yet. Certainly have time in the A-10. They are, for my money, the most talented roster in the league. Still, that
Absolutely.
carries at some point. You hope it comes out a little more freely at some point. They will play Lemoyne. As we said, they'll also have Harvard coming in here. That's after Christmas. That'll be a game that we break down on future editions of the pod. Coity, got anything else?
No, we're good. We're rolling, Billy. Next time we're on this podcast, we're going to be talking about Big East basketball. Let's
Yes.
go.
Yes, we may have some Christmas wishes for our programs at that point. May have a little Coit Kondo holiday party preview as well mixed into the podcast.
Because
You
I'm
never
sure
know.
everybody wants to hear about that.
Never know. We could have a live draft of the guest list, Coit. Say who on the team.
It's a good one this year. There might
Right.
be some sleepers.
Oh, I love a sleeper.
Yeah.
Love a sleeper. All right, Coity. Thank you as always to the folks who listen. Thank you as well. We will be back with you shortly. Enjoy the games.